Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Wednesday, August 9th, 2023. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Washington microbreweries sue Idaho over bill over law preventing them from self-distributing beers. Pullman City Council votes to suspend enforcement of ordinance prohibiting e-bikes and e-scooters on city streets. Health officials want Youth Mental Health Crisis Center in Idaho's Health Region 2, and judge dismisses TikTok psychic's counterclaims against University of Idaho professor she accused of being behind the quadruple murders of four UI students last fall. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report.
KRFP, Moscow is the best in the USA.
Yeah.
And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. The Pullman City Council voted 5-1 last night to suspend enforcement of an ordinance prohibiting the use of e-bikes and e-scooters on city streets. The resolution also orders city staff to establish a fee schedule for abandoned or misplaced e-bikes or e-scooters and established a 15-mile-per-hour speed limit. The moratorium will end May 10th, 2024. During discussion before the vote, City Councilmember Ann Parks commented on the end date for the moratorium.
Well, it's my understanding that the reason there's an end date to this is during this period of time, we would collect information, feedback about concerns, as RJ said, and we could also have public hearing when all of the students, faculty, and staff are back in town. That was my understanding of why we're doing this and having an end date to this resolution. And as Mayor just asked, if there is a grave concern that comes up or saying we need to address, we do have the opportunity to do that.
Councilmember Megan Guido said her concern was the 20-mile-per-hour speed limit for e-bikes and e-scooters in the proposed resolution.
I get my questions go more specifically to the 20 miles per hour. I am getting feedback from people that they feel like that's high and could potentially be dangerous. As Councilmember Weller said, that you get going pretty fast, and if you're not adept at using these things, that could not be good. That does take some coordination. So I have concerns about the 20 miles per hour. I know that most bike trails are 15 at maximum. And if we're going to do downtown, I would suggest even lower. So I guess my question goes to, do we have the ability to, is it 20 miles per hour across the board, or can we customize that to some extent?
That was Pullman City Councilmember Megan Guido. The council changed the maximum speed limit to 15 miles per hour. The company Spin is currently renting e-scooters on the Washington State University campus, and although people can operate the scooters on campus, they have not been legally allowed to operate on city streets. Councilmember Francis Benjamin reminded the council the resolution would not allow Spin to operate downtown.
Passing this resolution would not allow Spin to come down off campus and operate. They would still need to go through the proper permitting process with the city to be able to be a license down here. And I think as part of that particular piece, we would also designate proper drop-off zones for their particular piece of equipment. It certainly wouldn't absolve the regular population from that, but at least if the concern is with the user, there is another layer that we can add to that for designating proper parking zones.
Councilmember Nathan Weller emphasized a need for council members to talk with e-bike and e-scooter users before making final decisions on rules for the micro-mobility devices on off-campus streets. Weller said he tried using an e-scooter for the first time earlier in the day, and he felt 20 miles per hour was plenty fast.
Way too fast. I think I was going maybe 5, and that you get going pretty quick, especially if you're on the streets Not all of our streets are super well maintained. They're getting that way. But hitting a bump, anything like that, at 20 miles on something like that, if they're going to be on the streets, and they're going to be on the streets, that's going to be, you know, a challenge. So that's all I'll say on that. As far as this is really why we need public people who have done this on a but I digress. So the scooter that I used, you had to take a picture of where you placed it and had to make sure that it was in a designated area. And then that would be sent to the company, so just in case, you know, you're placing it somewhere, they can find you. I don't know if that's what we're going to do, how we're going to do that. I'm assuming that if students do take these downtown, they may end up taking the bus back up or something along those lines, possibly. So then it could get left. And, I mean, we've experienced where not students pay fines, and we've had a lot of challenges with that. And I agree. I'm glad that there's the $150 on there for pickup. I would also like to remind, I know I have received a number of emails over since they started doing spin, and since he rides scooters. He came up and talked to us. Mm-hmm. He said there was a group that could come and give us a presentation. We talked to him. Yeah. So we have that out here, and I am very uncomfortable with a let's make dosage and see how it turns out. It doesn't fit right with anything that we've done with dealing with ordinances previously, especially when none of us have that experience.
That was Pullman City Councilmember Nathan Weller. The council plans to schedule a public hearing on permanent rules for e-bikes and e-scooters off campus after the resolution takes effect. The Idaho Youth Ranch in Caldwell is opening a residential mental health treatment center for youth that may end the practice of Idaho families sending their children out of state if they want them to get mental health care in a residential facility. The Idaho Capital Sun reports the new facility, called the Residential Center for Healing and Resilience, will have 64 beds in individual rooms and will provide 24-hour nursing, psychiatric care, therapy, and year-round schooling for over 100 children between the ages of 11 and 17 each year. Idaho Youth Ranch Vice President of Marketing and Communication, Jeff Myers, says most of the children will be on Medicaid, although the facility will also treat children that are privately insured. Idaho Youth Ranch CEO Scott Curtis told the Idaho Capital Sun, "This is an Idaho challenge that deserves an Idaho solution, not just because we should be taking care of that locally, but because it makes a difference therapeutically. To send youth to another state is another trauma for them to deal with. To keep them closer to their families and caregivers will help their therapy work be more effective and more lasting." The Idaho Region 2 Behavioral Health Board will meet at 1:30 p.m. tomorrow to discuss the state's high suicide rate among rural youth in hopes of bringing a youth crisis center to the region. Idaho's suicide rate among rural youth remains one of the highest in the nation. To date, the state only has 4 youth crisis centers, all in southern or southeastern Idaho. According to the Lewiston Tribune, Idaho Region 2 Behavioral Health Board Chair Jim Rader of Cottonwood said, "There's nothing for youth in this area, and we have high youth suicide rates." Last year, the Idaho legislature approved and appropriated Governor Little's recommendation of $4.4 million in one-time funding to the Idaho Department of Juvenile Corrections budget to establish more youth crisis centers in collaboration with the Idaho Health and Welfare Department. The centers would be similar to adult crisis centers and would provide short-term placement up to 23 hours and 59 minutes for youths in crisis who are experiencing crises such as suicide, self-harming, psychosis, and other behavioral health problems. Youth crisis centers have been shown to reduce hospitalizations, criminal charges, domestic violence, child abuse, and placement into residential treatment. Rader said, prisons are full of people with mental health and substance abuse disorders that have been the de facto treatment centers for mental health, and that's not right. So crisis centers are to divert people to a place where they can have care and assessments of what their needs are in an inpatient or outpatient setting. Republican State Representative Lori McCann of Lewiston will be attending tomorrow's meeting. Rader said McCann has expressed interest in establishing a youth crisis center in Region 2 and has already met with Governor Brad Little to discuss it. Rader said McCann will hear from us. She's very interested in getting something in Region 2. According to Public Health Idaho North Central District spokesperson Joyce Lyons, a group from Region 2 unsuccessfully applied for a grant to fund a youth crisis center last year. Lyons said one of the proposals was a youth crisis center to be housed in the Northwest Children's Home in Lewiston. Lyons said, "We had a really good plan. We'll have to reapply, but we had over 50 stakeholders that provided letters of support for our children's crisis center. There is a need for a children's crisis center because there aren't a lot of places to take children when they're in crisis. They usually have to be hospitalized, and that's not always necessary." Tomorrow's meeting is via Zoom and open to the public. More information on the meeting is available on the Behavioral Health Board website for Region 2. Moscow resident Stefan Yachtzi, Pocatello resident Jane Roberts, and two Central Washington breweries are suing the state of Idaho over its beer distribution laws, which prohibit out-of-state entities from self-distributing beer to retailers. The lawsuit claims the Idaho law violates the Commerce Clause of the U.S. Constitution. Yachtzi, Roberts, and Dwinnell Country Ales of Goldendale, Washington, and Varietal Beer Company of Sunnyside, Washington, filed the suit in U.S. District Court August 4th. The Idaho Press reports, according to Idaho Code, in-state beer brewers who produce fewer than 30,000 barrels of beer per year are allowed to obtain an annual wholesale license, which allows them to self-distribute their beers to retailers. In the lawsuit, the plaintiffs claim the law shields Idaho business from interstate competition, which is a violation of the Commerce Clause of the U.S. Constitution. The suit claims the law gives Idaho breweries an unfair advantage because out-of-state brewers need to go through outside wholesalers at an increased cost. The lawsuit asks the court to block enforcement of the law and to allow out-of-state breweries who meet the same criteria the same access to a wholesale license to distribute their beers in Idaho. The complaint says the plaintiffs seek a declaratory judgment that this scheme discriminates against out-of-state producers in violation of the Dormant Commerce Clause. In the suit, plaintiffs Yachtzi and Roberts are described as beer collectors. The suit says Roberts desires special beers that are difficult to locate. As a consumer of fine and artisanal beer, she would like to purchase craft beer from out-of-state beer producers in Washington, which would be added to her beer collection, and have those beers shipped to her residence in Idaho. But Idaho laws, rules, and practices prohibit the out-of-state beer producers from doing so. The defendants in the case are Idaho State Police Alcohol Control Division Captain Rocky Gripton and Idaho Attorney General Raul Labrador. Attorneys Robert Epstein and James Tanford of Epstein, Seif, Porter, and Butel, and Pocatello attorney Heidi Buck Morrison of Racine Olson, PLLP, are representing the breweries in the suit. Epstein formerly represented Washington Breweries in a similar lawsuit against the state of Oregon, which resulted in a settlement and Oregon agreeing to permit out-of-state breweries to self-distribute their beers. In a news release, Dwindle Country Ale's co-owner Justin Lee wrote, "The success in Oregon affirmed the effectiveness of our legal strategy. We are optimistic we'll experience similar success in Idaho." And you're listening to the KRFP Evening Report on KRFP Moscow Pullman.
Idaho AFL-CIO, dedicated to representing the interests of working people at the state and local level.
KRFP is also sponsored by the Palouse Folklore Society, celebrating traditional music and dance on the Palouse since 1982. The Palouse Folklore Society sponsors concerts, jam sessions, and a monthly contra dance. Find out more at PalouseFolk.org or on Facebook.
Events across the country are marking this as National Health Center Week, including in Oregon. Community health centers provide affordable health care options to more than 30 million Americans, regardless of their ability to pay. Virginia Garcia Memorial Health Center operates in Yamhill and Washington counties and emphasizes care for seasonal and migrant workers in the area. Casey Widola with Virginia Garcia says health centers act as central hubs for information and support.
A community health center isn't just about health care. It's about the whole person and ensuring that people who have barriers or are not able to access all of the things that make a person healthy, that they're able to do that.
Widola says Virginia Garcia has five clinics, and each is inviting people to events to celebrate National Health Center Week. The 15,000 community health center locations across the country are critical, especially for lower-income or underinsured people, who make up 90% of the patients they serve. However, health centers are facing a financial cliff. Funding in Congress needs to be reauthorized by September 30th. Widola says centers would have to cut services drastically if that doesn't happen.
Without it, there would be a huge gap between the care that our community needs and what we could provide.
The Community Health Center Fund provides about 70% of the federal money that goes to community health centers. For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
U.S. Magistrate Judge Raymond Patricio dismissed all 11 of the counterclaims TikTok personality Ashley Gillard brought against University of Idaho history professor Rebecca Schofield yesterday. Texas resident Ashley Gillard, who claims to tens of thousands of TikTok followers that she is a psychic, has repeatedly posted videos on her TikTok site claiming Schofield ordered the killings of University of Idaho students Zena Kernodle, Ethan Chapin, Kaylee Gonsalves, and Madison Mogan. She continued posting her claims in TikTok videos after police arrested former Washington State University student Brian Koberger for the quadruple murders in December. Koberger is being held in the Latah County Jail awaiting his trial, which is scheduled for October 2nd through November 12th. Schofield sued Gillard over the posts and allegations. Schofield's complaint says Gillard promotes herself on TikTok as an internet sleuth who solves high-profile murders using tarot cards and by performing other readings. Gillard also alleges Schofield had a personal relationship with one of the murder victims, which Schofield denies. Moscow police confirmed in December they do not believe Schofield was involved in the murders. In her lawsuit, Schofield claimed Gillard's false accusations have damaged her reputation, made her fear for her and her family's safety, and made her the subject of online threats. Schofield sent Gillard two cease and desist letters on November 29th and December 8th, stating the allegations were false and defamatory, demanding Gillard take down the videos. Court documents say Gillard persisted and continued to post videos about Schofield, including showing the cease and desist letter on her TikTok site. The Daily News reports Gillard has since filed 11 counterclaims against Schofield, in which she also tried to include Schofield's lawyers, claiming Schofield had defamed her by denying the claims. Following hearing oral arguments July 21st from Schofield's attorney Wendy Olson and from Gillard, Judge Patricio, in a written decision yesterday, said there was no objective basis to believe any of Gillard's claims against Schofield. Patricio wrote, he agreed with Olson's argument Gillard did not provide any plausible facts to support her complaint. He wrote Gillard had posted more than 100 TikTok videos which falsely claimed Schofield was behind the murders. Patricio also wrote Gillard had said her claims were based on spiritual research, intuition, and psychic abilities. Patricio wrote, the claims are, quote, arguably so outrageous as to be clearly baseless and thus implausible. Patricia went on to write, Schofield did not know any of the victims, had never taught them in any class, and was in Portland visiting friends at the time of the murders. Gillard had previously said during oral arguments she believed her claims were true and evidence corroborating them would come out during discovery. Judge Patricio responded to that argument, writing, to begin, defendant cannot use discovery as a fishing expedition to find facts that might validate her counterclaims. This ready-fire-aim approach is not permitted under the federal rules of civil procedure. However, Patricio did not allow Schofield to recoup her attorney's fees from Gillard, stating Gillard was not an attorney and could not be held to the same standard as an attorney acting in bad faith. Patricio wrote, additionally, the court cannot conclude with any confidence that defendant has purposely delayed or disrupted the litigation. Meritless counterclaims asserted by a non-attorney do not automatically rise to that level. Besides dismissing Gillard's 11 counterclaims against Schofield, Patricio also dismissed Gillard's motion to summon Schofield's attorneys. Meanwhile, Schofield's defamation case against Gillard is still pending.
A Barbecue in Seattle is bringing the community together and will support events for youth of color in the region. United Way of King County's second annual community barbecue is on Saturday at Renton Memorial Stadium. Proceeds will go to the Racial Equity Coalition's after-school programming. The coalition is made up of 14 organizations serving Black, Indigenous, and other communities of color. Joy Sebe with United Way of King County says one of the organizations is Red Eagle Soaring, which teaches and helps Native youth perform Native stories.
It not only allows Native youth to be in community with each other, see caring adults, and then to share their collective stories, but it also provides the Seattle community with an opportunity to learn about Native ways of life.
Red Eagle Soaring's executive director, Russell Brooks, will provide the land acknowledgement at the community barbecue on Saturday. The event runs from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Food plates for the event are $10, but no one will be turned away if they can't afford that. People can also donate plates. Sebe says organizations providing support for people of color often share common experiences, but can still be separated from each other. She says the coalition helps overcome that.
What this coalition provides is the opportunity for us to come together to learn from each other, to learn from our cultural differences, and then support one another as a collective.
The community barbecue was started last year by former Seattle Seahawks player Doug Baldwin. Mari Hirabayashi is with United Way of King County.
It just sounded so fun and really a great way to bring people back out into the open after COVID and everybody sort of redoing their lives again. So that was the true inspiration, and it's just taken off since then.
For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather from the National Weather Service, it will be mostly clear, at least through Sunday, with a low of 52 tonight, highs 79 tomorrow, 83 Friday and Saturday, and 90 on Sunday, lows 48 Thursday night, and 52 Friday and Saturday night. Currently 79 degrees. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box there that says Support KRFP. There you can adopt a DJ. You can underwrite programming, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know your business supports community radio. You can also use a PayPal option and a Patreon button. Once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho 83843. Also on the KRFP website, you can stream KRFP and listen to archived editions of any show broadcast on KRFP from the last 2 weeks. I'm Lee Robartis. Kurt Morrison assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant evening. We'll have a commentary from Planet Nancy. Then Flashpoints is coming on. And at 7:30, Lockdown Mosh Pit. And at 8:30, we'll have music beginning in earnest with Grateful Dead Through the Decades. We'll have our weekly musical at 10 p.m. What's the Frequency, Kenneth? So stay tuned. KRFP, Moscow Pullman.
KRFP is supported by listeners like you and by Moscow Ale House, with something for everyone in the family. You can find Moscow Ale House at 226 West 6th Street or call 208-882-BREW. That's 208-882-2739.